All right, everybody. Coach Dana Cavalier here with the Becoming a Champion show. And today I sat down with the one, the only, Mr. Dennis Prager. And it is an awesome episode. He shares his philosophies on life, on liberty, on courage, on happiness, you name it. We covered it all. And it is definitely going to be worth every minute of your time. So sit back and enjoy this awesome episode with Mr. Dennis Prager. And if you do, give us a like, give us a thumbs up. Anyway, sit back and enjoy. We share something in common that you don't know. You have an Otto and I have a Rocco.
An English Bulldog?
An English Bulldog, yes.
Oh, God. They're the best.
Yes, yes.
They're so relaxed.
I know. We could learn something from them, don't you think?
Well, if everybody were as relaxed as a bulldog, there would be no wars, but we would not have invented the wheel.
That's true.
Nothing would have happened.
I guess if we did invent the wheel, it would only go around like once or twice, or we get too tired for it to go anymore.
That's right, exactly.
So very cool. Well, I'm excited to have you. I admire what it is that you do, and I one of the things I admire most is your ability to simplify and distill what many will feel are complex topics and make them easy to understand. So thank you for doing that, and I have a couple great questions for you today, I think. And I wanted to start with this one, if you don't mind.
Sure.
We're in a very interesting state of affairs across this country right now. And I just wanted to leave that very open in saying, what do you think about things as they are right now?
I think they're terrible, actually. And I wrote a book on happiness, so my disposition is a happy one. So for a happy person to tell you that things are awful is unfortunate. I don't believe in sugarcoating reality. I hate panic and hysteria, and I also hate phony sugarcoating. You can't make a better world if you're not realistic. Right now, the threat to freedom is the greatest in the history of this country, greater than during the Civil War. Half this country doesn't give a damn about liberty. I'm shocked to tell you that. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land of the free, home of the brave. Half this country is neither free nor brave. Cowardice is the dominant disposition. These are very sad things for me, who loves this country, who's devoted my life to this country, to say to you. But it doesn't help to deny it.
Yeah.
And so whether it's freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of the press, we call it cancel culture, but it's really just totalitarianism.
And the lack of courage, where did that originate? Where do you see that originating?
That's a great question. So I'm glad you asked me this now and not 2 weeks ago, because I have a national radio show for your viewers who don't know this. I've had it for almost 40 years. So I'm on around the country. I have a lot of listeners. And so I pose questions, and I've learned a tremendous amount from listeners. So one of my 15 hours a week, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, one of my 15 hours is called the happiness hour. As I said, I wrote a book on happiness. I think happiness is extremely important. The motto of my show is the happy make the world better, the unhappy make it worse. That's true on personal level, and it's true on a societal level. So I did exactly what you asked 2 weeks ago. I asked the question about the courage and fear, actually about fear more than courage. Why are some people so fearful and others are not? I'm in the category of not.
Okay.
And so I came to a resolution, a realization, I should say, that blew my mind, which is a funny thing to say about your own realization.
Yeah.
But I think aloud on the radio as I'm thinking aloud when I'm talking to you right now.
Yeah.
And I said something that opened up the answer to your question. I said, let me think how was I raised? Maybe it has to do with how you're raised. And then I realized I was not coddled as a child at all. I think my parents told me they loved me twice. I got hugged about three times. I was not coddled, to say the least. Kids are coddled. Since World War II, kids have been coddled. Coddled makes the following: unhappy adults, spoiled adults, and cowards. Other than that, it's really terrific.
Yeah.
The damage you do coddling your children is almost immeasurable. And one of the things produced are utterly uncourageous people and frightened people. They're frightened of reality. That's why on college campuses, they've put up safe spaces. If a speaker comes to college that you differ with, you can go there and they give you hot chocolate and stuffed animals and Play-Doh, lest God forbid you be confronted by a speaker you don't agree with. Can you imagine that? Imagine in World War II, we wouldn't have fought the war. Because fighting Nazis and the Japanese was even harder than a speaker who comes to campus you don't agree with. But they weren't coddled.
Do they bring speakers to campus that the kids don't agree with? Is that a common thing these days, or do they just do they make it to the stage?
That's a great question. Some do, some don't. I have spoken to many college campuses. There's always a demonstration. I actually try, if I can, to meet the demonstrators and actually talk to them. They're stunned that I would even talk to them. And it's a complete incoherence. What exactly about me are you objecting to? And they basically don't know what to say.
Yeah. They may not even know what they object to.
That's right. They may not even know what they object to.
Yeah.
Or they make something up that has no bearing on reality.
But where does that originate? Like, where does that come from?
So that comes from the one part of the political spectrum, the left. And I always distinguish between leftists and liberals. Liberalism is beautiful, and conservatism is beautiful. Leftism is completely destructive. Liberals don't understand that their values are protected by conservatives and threatened by the left. Everywhere the left, in the history of the left, since Vladimir Lenin and the Russian Revolution in 1917, there is no exception to the following rule. Anywhere the left gains control, it suppresses dissent. There's no freedom of speech. That's from the college campus to Russia in 1917. That has been the rule. There is no example of left being in control and freedom of speech existing.
Interesting.
Yeah. And frightening.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. You know, what's interesting is there's very much, you see, a one-sided narrative today. And so many today, you know, that are on the side that's, so-called winning, they feel really good about their position. But at the end of the day, everybody's freedom in a way becomes compromised with what's going on.
Yeah, but people don't realize it. They really do think that you could take away the liberty of a certain group and it won't ultimately affect them. They don't understand that mandates, we will not allow you to earn a living if you don't get vaccinated, will one day come to haunt them. Yeah. So they say, oh, screw the unvaccinated, let them drop dead. But totalitarians never stop with one group. Once you give them permission to suppress group A, group B through Z follows. That's the famous statement of a pastor in Germany. So they came after the labor unions, but I wasn't in a labor union, so I said nothing. Then they came after the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, so I said nothing. And then they came after me, but there was nobody left to speak up for me.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
And like, you know, again, we talked about courage. You know, to stand up for anything or to anybody takes courage. So
that's
if you
right.
kill courage, you tend to kill resistance as well to anything.
Well, you kill society. So I have dealt with this. I actually gave a speech. I worked very hard on it because it's a very difficult subject. So I gave a speech about 4 years ago, how to become courageous. And it was a 45-minute speech, so I won't review it. I will only offer one incredibly simple sounding, even simplistic sounding recommendation. Basically in life, and I know you will agree with this based on your work, basically in life, you become what you want to be. Mm. You want to be courageous, you'll be courageous. If you don't want to be courageous, you won't be. So you have to say, I want to be courageous. And then you are. It's like magic.
Yeah. Is the same true for everything else? Because I think as you're saying courageous, I'm saying, what if you replace that with somebody that's scared? Do they want to be scared?
Same thing. Well, that's a very, very, you ask good questions, by the way. And I'm on a lot of, I'm interviewed a lot. So
not bad for a coach, right?
No, that's it. Well, I have a very warm feeling toward coaches. I'll explain why if you want afterwards.
Right. Yes.
But anyway, so the fear issue is very tough. A guy called my show. I told you I did an hour on this on my radio show. A guy called and he really had an impact on me. He said, I was raised by a mother who constantly said, be safe, be careful. Mm. And he said, that paralyzed me as an adult. And I am working all of my life to get that voice out of my head.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the fact that unlike for me, who I don't remember my parents once saying, be safe. I don't think they said it once. I remember when I told my father, I'm going to Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Egypt, and Israel. And I was about 25 years old. He said, hey, you're only young once. Have a good time.
See you when you get home.
Yeah. But most parents would have freaked out, especially I was and still I'm Jewish, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Jews going to Syria, not maybe the best idea. But they just said, have a great time. You live once. But this guy's mother would have said, what, are you crazy? You can't go there. There are people who still won't visit Israel. Forget Syria. They won't even go to Israel. Mm. People have told me on the radio, oh, I'll go to Israel when it's safe. So I came up with a great motto you'll love. When it's safe means never.
Yeah. You're a translator.
Yes, I'm a translator. That's what I do. I translate. I translate English into English. That's exactly right. So I appreciate the fact that the scared have a very tough time becoming unscared.
So what is your thought, again, to just kind of keep this going? What's your thought on the word toughness?
Well, it's the opposite of scared. It's a great word.
Yeah.
Toughness doesn't mean you're not kind or you're not generous or you're not compassionate, but life is tough. So if you're not tough, life will defeat you.
Yeah. Because, you know, today you see there is this be kind. You see be kind everywhere. And it's like, well, if to be kind, I have to be this. And this is usually not tough, not strong, not bold, it's all those knots.
A great point again. I love kind. I hope that people who are in my life believe I'm kind. I work to be kind, but I'm very tough.
Yeah.
But you're right that for many, kind is the opposite of tough, not the opposite of unkind.
Yeah.
So that's back to the coddling issue.
Yeah.
But as I said to you just a moment ago, if life is tough and you're not, won't it defeat you?
Yeah. Yeah. See, coming from sports, I look at it like every day you have to get up and compete.
Exactly.
You
can be a kind player, but you could be a tough player. One has nothing to do with the other.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to show up every day and do your best.
That's right.
It's like a question I had for you was for you, you know, you're in radio. You have figured out how to rise above a lot of the noise just through your career journey. How did you do that? I mean, I'm sure it wasn't an easy, pleasurable, joyous.
Right. So I will answer you in one moment. I just want to corroborate your point on sports, which you'll appreciate, obviously, given that this is about baseball. So if you watch, I was at the World Series game in Houston, by the way. I went with my son and grandson. It was awesome. So if you watch games on TV, and certainly if you go live, you will notice that very, very often, say the player on the hitting team, on the batting team is, you know, gets to first base, second base, third base, is on base.
Right.
You will notice how often they talk to the first baseman, second baseman, or third baseman of the opposing team. They're kind.
Yeah.
But they'll do everything they can to steal the next base.
Yeah.
Or score a run.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect example of kind and tough.
Yeah.
The base runner chatting it up with the opposition. And then the second the pitch is thrown, I will do anything to defeat you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great thing. You learn so much from sport.
You do, you know. I agree with you.
But even sport, you know, if you look at the last 20 years has changed quite a bit. It's lost a little bit of its edge. There's still a very high competition factor, but it's a little bit neutralized relative.
Well, I'd be curious to get your opinion. I think designated hitter was a terrible, terrible idea. It undid a very important part of baseball. Everyone has to bat.
Yes.
That's part of the game.
Yeah. And you have two leagues that are functioning different. Yet,
right. You know, so they're going to change that now with the negotiations because they want more older guys to be hired or whatever, you know, as designated hitters. I don't know what the exact reasoning is of the unions, but I think it's hurt the game. Yeah. So I salute the National League for keeping it, but I don't know if they'll keep it for the next year. They said that, you know, this might be the last year you will ever see a pitcher a hit.
Wow. I know a lot of pitchers are going to be bummed out because the guys that enjoy hitting, man, they just love that at bat, that chance to go deep. Like CC Sabathia was one of those guys.
Well, there are very few of them, obviously.
Yeah,
but you're right. Who was in it? It was a pinch hitter. He served as a pinch hitter in the World Series. Oh, I forgot his name. Was it Ryan something? Anyway, he's such a and got a hit, by the way.
Yeah,
he's a great hitting pitcher. Anyway, back to your question, which was what again?
Through your journey again. You know.
Oh yeah, my own journey. Above. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look. As corny as it sounds, I'm very much animated by my values. Not very much. I'm entirely animated by my values. So let me give one piece of advice that has served me well. I do nothing in order to be loved. Mm. Nothing. I do everything according to my conscience. And if people hate me as a result, then that's the way life works. And if people love me, it's very sweet.
Yeah,
I get equal amounts of love and hate. People stop me at the airport and give me a hug and take a selfie. And then major mainstream media write articles mocking me and attacking me.
Yeah.
So I have I think you'll like this. I came up with another one of my many mottos about life. I don't let the insults go to my heart. And I don't let the compliments go to my head.
Mm. I like that.
Yeah. If everybody followed that, it would be healthier.
But how did you, were you always this way? I mean, if we were to date you back as a kid.
Yes,
in Brooklyn?
Always. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's why I take some credit for what I've done, but I know that 50% this is the way I am. I was like this in high school.
Yeah. Can you become that way? Is that something you can acquire?
That's another great question. I do believe, well, look, here, look. I love classical music, and I studied the piano, and I developed the ability to conduct orchestras, which is not a normal ability if you're not a professional musician, but I do. But anyway, I knew at a very early age, I will never be a great pianist. I didn't have the ability to be a great pianist.
Right.
So, okay. So I made peace with that. There, not everybody has the same abilities as others. I mean, it's so obvious, I shouldn't have to say it. So when you ask, can anybody become that? Anybody can become a whole host of things. Specific talents, those are given out by God or genes or both. And that, you know, look, I was born a good speaker. Okay. But I have worked tremendously on being better at it. So there's an innate gift, but you have to work your tail off. Nevertheless, with regard to characteristics, most people can become courageous. Most people can start thinking more clearly. Most people don't think clearly. They think with their emotions. And that you can learn to think with your mind, not your emotions. It's not easy for a lot of people because emotions are more powerful than the mind.
Yeah.
One great achievement of what we call Judeo-Christian values is that the Bible warns people not to follow their heart repeatedly. I am often in homes. I've been in hundreds and hundreds of homes because I will go to fundraisers for PragerU there, my organization, Prager University, and or give speeches there for other things. So often I will see, I'll never forget, in one home I spoke, and I love these people. They were wonderful people. Follow your heart. They had a you know, a plaque up in the house. It's the worst idea you can possibly give people. Follow your heart is about as bad as don't stop at a red light. It's completely destructive idea. Follow your heart.
So somebody may hear that and say, well, follow your heart. Isn't that the same as follow your passion in a way?
No, it's not. Follow your passion is with regard to work. If you're passionate about woodwork, I think you should, in fact, work on being a great woodworker. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Although we have a video up at PragerU, which is I only give 1 out of 10, so it's not me who gave it, and it is a brilliant video about not necessarily following your passion. I use my father, my late father, as an example. His passion was medicine. He wanted to be a doctor more than anything, but his parents had no money to send him to medical school. So he became an accountant. And what my father did, this was a fantastic example for me to see. He just fell in love with accounting. So his new passion was accounting. You don't have one passion in life.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's very true. I feel like that's where people get a little bit off course, is they say,
yes,
you know, I love this so much, and it continues to maybe not work out for them, yet they continue to do it.
Do it as a hobby.
Yeah.
You don't have to necessarily make a living at it.
Right.
Making a living and passion aren't the same thing.
Yeah.
They could be, but they're not necessarily.
Yeah, it's true. When you say don't follow your heart, your heart is where the emotion comes from. Is that what you're insinuating or saying?
That is right. That is right. Emotions make us human. But if emotions lead you, you will act like an animal.
So do you think...
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, do you think is that what also creates a vulnerability for people as it relates to, say, negative impact of social media and things that they're constantly seeing?
Well, that's where they didn't follow my advice. Don't let the insults go to your heart, and don't let the compliments go to your head. Which is how I live. So I don't get high on the love, and I don't get low on the insults. I doesn't mean I don't deeply appreciate the warmth that people extend to me. I do. I appreciate it, but I don't live for it.
Yeah,
and that's very important. I live for the love. I want love from my wife, from my children, and my friends. That's it.
Yeah, I love that. So as you were coming up, let's say, you know, I'll use a sporting term, as you're coming up the ranks, you know, there's people that as they're coming up the ranks, they feel like they have to say yes, they have to please everybody. And that's what's going to grant them you know, their next step on the ladder or give them access to the next place on the ladder. You're saying, hey, stop that. That's not.
Well, if you don't stop it, that's right. That's what I'm saying. You'll never stop. So you will never be the authentic you.
Yeah.
All you will do is act like you think others want you to act. That's not a great way to live a life. You may, in fact, be more successful, but the purpose of life isn't to be a professional success. Purpose of life is to live a full life and be a good human being.
Yeah. I feel like that's what plagues a lot of corporate cultures today, too, is that everybody's trying to just please the boss or please the person that they need to please to get to the next place. And you have crumbling cultures in many companies today as a result.
It's true. It's true up the ladder. I mean, when Major League Baseball puts political slogans on the mound or NFL on helmets.
Yeah.
That's all done to please the New York Times.
Yeah.
And to please CNN and to please the woke. Everybody's pleasing people and being inauthentic in the process. Stand for something. Yeah. I think Major League Baseball did terrible damage to baseball. The NFL did terrible damage to football and the NBA to basketball.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't watch an NBA game. I don't want to go to a place where half the players, if not more, hate America and hate me.
Yeah. I agree. I haven't done much watching myself, to be honest with you. It's gotten away from just what it is, and it's turned into something that it shouldn't be.
That's personal correct. Living.
That's what I mean. That's what I believe. So I want to ask you this, you know, is the American dream still alive and well in your mind?
Well, if by American dream, we mean that this is the land of opportunity, that dream still exists. You work hard, you lead a responsible life, the odds are you'll be a success.
Yeah.
The left denies that. They say, unless you're a white Christian male, even if you work hard and lead an honorable life, the society will stomp on you. It's a gigantic lie. It's a 100% lie. Anybody, as I always point out, 3 million blacks moved to this country, 2 million from Africa, 1 million from the Caribbean in the last few decades. Why would they move to a country that is anti-black? Why would they move to a country that's systemically racist? Did Jews move to Germany in the 1930s? Not one Jew moved to Germany in the 1930s, because that was a truly systemically racist society, anti-Semitic specifically. But are these blacks out of their minds? Why would they move to a country, 3 million compared to 340,000 who came as slaves, by the way? 3 million blacks moved to this country. You know why? Because they know this is the land of opportunity, no matter what your color. The American dream is alive, but that dream is alive that you can get forward if you work hard.
Yeah.
But the dream of a free society may not survive.
Interesting. And if there's no free society, how can you do what it is that you want to do and build what it is you want to build?
Well, theoretically, if you keep your mouth shut and follow the authorities and do everything they tell you to do and snitch on your neighbor as they're telling people to do. Where is it, Sue? In Santa Monica, California?
Yes.
Santa Monica, they just announced snitch on your on any business that allows anybody in who isn't vaccinated.
No, face masks.
I'm sorry. Oh, face masks, even more. Face masks, yeah. So the when you teach people, when the authorities tell you to snitch on your neighbor, you know that this is a dress rehearsal for a police state, which is what I fear is happening. People should not think that Nazism, communism, and fascism were unique to European countries or for that matter, China or Japan as well. It could happen here. And not enough Americans are fighting for freedom. They weren't taught to value freedom. Why would they fight for it?
So that's an interesting line. How do you fight for it? How do you fight for? Because most people say, I don't want to go to jail.
By speaking up. And you will be ridiculed and mocked and attacked if you speak up. That is all correct. You might even lose your job. Hmm. Now, I can't tell people lose your job. It's not right for me to tell people speak up even if you lose your job. Hmm. That is a decision you have to make. But not for everybody is the danger losing their job. It's losing friends. That's true. But any friend who stops talking to you because you say that you love America, for example, is why would you want that friend to begin with?
Yeah.
Maybe now they revealed their own value system and character to you. And anyway, here's the beauty. When you speak up, you make new friends, people who do share your values.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, I know it because that's exactly what happens to people. There was a girl who came on my radio show. She's now a senior at Harvard. She was a junior then. And reading one of my books and then listening to my show and PragerU, she changed from left to right. She's a brilliant young woman. And I invited her to come on my radio show. So I told her before she came on in the studio, I said, I just want you to know, coming on my show, you will lose friends. You will be attacked. You will be ridiculed. And if you don't want to do it, I completely understand. So she said, well, may I call my mom? Which I thought was very, very endearing. She called her mother, came back in after I did my next segment. She said, I'm coming on the radio. So she came on. And then a few months later, I spoke to her again and I said, what happened? And she said, I went through 2 weeks of hell. I'll never forget her description. I lost friends I had since elementary school. Relatives attacked me. Said, and then after 2 weeks, I went to heaven. All these wonderful people who came into my life as a result. And one other thing, Dennis, I'll never forget her telling me this. I slept better than I had in years.
Wow.
When you are true to yourself, you sleep better.
Yeah. And it's so interesting you say that because there's a message you always see is like, be yourself. Everybody says be yourself, yet very few actually.
But they're not.
Yeah.
But they're not.
Yeah. It's wild. When, you know, we kind of glance over this a little bit, your journey, your career journey, where did you start?
So I have, and some people do, some people don't, have a lot of different lives. I've had a lot of different lives. I've had one life in terms of my values, but many different lives. So I, until the age of 32, I was involved almost entirely in an American Jewish life. I wrote two books on Judaism, and I had studied it in intensely biblical Hebrew till I was 19. And I was the head of a big Jewish institute in California, and people would come for weekends retreats to this institute. One woman who came was very friendly with the head of ABC Radio in Los Angeles. This was all in LA. And he said to her, you know, I'm looking for a talk show host for a program we have here with a priest, rabbi, minister, and I need a moderator. And he or she has to know religion well, but not be a clergy person. She said, I have the perfect person for you. This kid, he's 30 years old, and he knows religion incredibly well. He speaks well, and he's not a clergyman. Mm. So they tried me out. The night they tried me out, they hired me. And that was the beginning of my radio career. It very rapidly went from this program of 2 hours on Sunday nights to 5 hours on Sunday nights to 3 hours on Saturday nights. And there was all my own show. We talked about everything in life, not just religion. And then I got a weekday show, and then I got a national show. And in a nutshell, that's what happened. I never wanted to speak to only one religious or ethnic group. I wanted to talk to the world. And my dream has come true, both through radio and through PragerU, which has 1 billion views a year. Most of them are young people. So I'm a rare person who's sort of lived out his dream.
Yeah. Dennis, do you feel like you had a, did you force any of that? Was it like a forced journey, or did you feel like things just kept opening up? And it was
I was completely prepared to fail. Hmm. I knew from the outset that talking about the subjects I talk about is not the road to professional success. I'm the only talk show host outside of the religious world. I have a regular show, not a religious show, who talks a lot about God. And that's not a winning subject in secular life. So I took the gamble. I will talk about what matters to me and let the chips fall where they may. The chips have fallen well, but it was a real gamble.
Yeah. So for you, the fact that you talk about God, I'm assuming that you have a very high trust in God as the reason why, you know, you are where you are and you've, you know.
Well, this will surprise you. I don't think about trust in God. I have one thing I do trust in God, that in the final analysis, ultimate justice will prevail. And that means I believe in an afterlife. But I tell people all the time, I don't think God protects me. I think I'm as likely to be hit by a drunk driver as anybody else. I don't see God as a butler up in heaven. So I actually don't even ask God for things. I am much more interested in what God wants from me than what I want from God. That's my attitude.
Hmm. Interesting. Why do you think the dialogue around God has disappeared today?
We live in a radically secular society. You know, you hear very often people say, oh, wow, this guy's a religious extremist or religious fanatic, which is true. There are religious extremists and religious fanatics. But you never hear this guy's a secular extremist or a secular fanatic. Mm. In other words, you could be too religious, but you can't be too secular. That's what people have been brainwashed into believing. Hmm. But if I had to summarize my life's work, it has been explaining the terrible consequences of secularism. I'll give you one example. People are having fewer children than ever in American or Western history. Many countries are on their way to disappearing. Germany, Russia, the United States. The only reason the U.S. isn't is it was religious longer than European countries. But now that we're more secular, secular people have much fewer children than religious people. And that's called suicide. That's national suicide. Secularism, it doesn't give you a reason for being. It doesn't give you a reason for having children. It doesn't give you a reason for marrying. It doesn't give you a reason for anything. It's good for government and terrible for everything else.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I see, you know, I'll go on and I'll look at social media and you look at Instagram and you see how many people they just, it's all about me. It's all about now. It's all about look at me and what I'm doing. You know, there has to be a consequence to that sort of, I call it hedonistic behavior that you see over and over again.
Well, that's why if I could put up billboards, it wouldn't be God loves you. It would be God judges you.
Yeah.
I think you'll get a lot better behavior out of people. As I say to people, let's imagine two possible signs on highways. The police love you or the police judge you.
Yeah.
Which would get better driving?
Hmm. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. It's great to think about all this. I had something too that I put down that I definitely wanted to ask you your thoughts on, because You know, I work with a lot of executives also, and I work with a lot of parents of kids that are heading off to college or desiring to head off to college. And the parents say, hey, you know, philosophically, I don't believe in what's being taught at a lot of these colleges, but I feel like I have to still write the check. And I've heard many stories of children going to or young adults being sent to these colleges, and they come back very different and with a different set of values than we taught in our home. And I'm very worried about that. What do you?
Well, I've told people for 20 years, maybe more, sending your kid to college is playing Russian roulette with their values. And now it's true for high school and elementary school. I think the vast majority of people do not need to go to college. If you can't study physics on your own, I fully acknowledge that. So if you need a PhD in physics, go to college, but only go into the sciences. Even though they're being corrupted too, they're not yet as corrupt as women's studies, gender studies, sociology, English, already of the so-called social sciences. It's a very big mistake to send your kid to college just because you think they need a degree to get on in life. When they come home and they basically crap on everything you hold dear and precious, then you'll know what I said is right. But people are so brainwashed into believing my kid has to go to college. And to which I say, oh, really? Why? I was with a couple yesterday at my synagogue, and they had never been a non-Jewish couple who just attended a synagogue that I founded in LA with some friends. And after we have lunch after services, and then sometimes I interview people who were there. So I interviewed this couple. I didn't know them at all. And they have three grown children, none of whom went to college, and all of whom are happy, make a good living, and love their parents. That's not common if you send all three to college.
Yeah, very true. And they're happy.
Happy, doing well, work hard. She said, the mother, this is an incredible couple. They're both hairdressers, by the way. And the mother said, I told my kids, I don't care what grades you get. I care if you work hard. So go to work. You're 16, get a job. What a brilliant thing. I told my kids, I don't care about your grades. I don't care if you go to college. I only care about your character.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, very.
It is. Good stuff.
Yeah. And it has to take a bit of pressure off the kid too, because, you know, kids today are running around highly pressurized.
Well, it's the unhappiest American generation. Rates of suicide, rates of drug and alcohol abuse, rates of depression, number of kids on antidepressants, these unprecedented numbers in every single category, which, by the way, also has a tremendous amount to do with secularism. Religious kids are happier, healthier. By every metric, we can measure this.
Yeah. And so you feel like secularism leads to higher levels of stress, anxiety?
It doesn't give you anything to live for.
Yeah.
Religion gives you inner peace. Inner peace is everything.
Yeah, I love that. I have one more question for you. I call this the Becoming a Champion show. I feel like we're all working hard to become our champion selves and become that champion that we know is within us. What does the word champion mean to you?
Well, I always think in moral terms. So to me, a champion, and it's not the only definition I have, obviously, but a champion is a moral giant. Someone who has exhibited courage, stood up and done the right thing. Nobody does the right thing all the time. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody sins. But still, within that understanding, there are moral champions. There are also sports champions. I don't deny that. The Atlanta Braves are baseball's champions. I couldn't agree more, and I think it's great.
Yeah.
And they deserve it. And for a team to be so lousy in July and win the World Series.
Pretty cool, right?
That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
I don't live in Atlanta, but it's a great story. And I happened to be at the game where they won, which I'll never forget, certainly. But the better part is my 11-year-old grandson will never forget. And you know, by the way, in that regard, I said to some friends, this old cliche that baseball is bonding between a father and a son or grandson is true.
Yeah,
it was a wonderful bonding experience for me, my son and grandson to all be at that World Series game. I watched it unfold and I was very touched.
Yeah, it's a moment in time that's frozen for you, for the three of you.
That's right.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like it goes back and reminds me of, you know, they asked Joe DiMaggio why he plays every play and every game so hard. And he said, well, there may be somebody here that never saw me play before.
Wow, I didn't know that. So let me tell you something. At a very early age, because I began speaking publicly at 21, I decided that I would give as much effort in a speech to 15 people as to 1,500 people.
Yeah.
And I have never changed. A few people have mentioned that in the course of my lifetime. They will come over to me after and said, you know, there are only 25 people here. And you spoke with the same passion you do to 1,000 people. I said, well, why wouldn't I? Don't they deserve as quality a speech as the others?
Yeah.
So I love the DiMaggio line. I adopted it without knowing it.
Yeah, it's a great line because it's every day you have to show up. It's
and do your best.
And do your best, right? It's like we're all, you know, you're chasing excellence and you're putting excellence out there for somebody else to enjoy.
You know, let me just say something that most of your viewers may not have thought of, but it is a good practice session. If they want to follow your terrific advice about pursuing excellence, here's a little thing they can do that most people don't think about. Reread every text you send and make sure every word is spelled correctly. That will only affect you and the recipient. You're not writing a novel for publication, but it changes your life. Everything you do should be excellent, even a text message.
Yeah. Hey, Dennis, you're saying text message. For me, it's, you know, if you go to Starbucks or you go to a place to get a coffee, wherever it may be, and you see milk, you spill something. So many people, they spill and they just walk away, or they see a trail of napkins on the floor and they'll walk by, and my brain, it gets so locked in on that. I have to clean it. I have to do it. I have to. And you feel great when you do it. So that's my rendition of your text message.
That's exactly right. I wipe the water off the basin, the top of the sink, you know, on an airplane.
Yeah, that's great. So cool. Well, I appreciate you spending time with me today. It's Sunday and this was awesome. I love what you do and I love the values that you put out there and share with everybody.
So if I may just a little sort of add.
Yeah.
Anybody interested in anything in life should watch our 5-minute videos at PragerU, my last name, and a U for University. PragerU.com. It's free. So
yeah, we'll tag it. We'll put a link and everything.
Thank you. And the other is if you want to know what God and secularism and life are about, my Bible commentary called The Rational Bible, where it's not rooted in faith, it's rooted in reason, will touch your life. It's called The Rational Bible.
Hmm. And the book on happiness?
Happiness is a serious problem.
Yeah. And you have the answers.
I have answers.
All right. That's good enough. We'll take it.
That's right. That's correct.
Cool. Awesome. Dennis, thank you so much again.
Well, it's been a joy.
Your time.
You're cool. A special guy. Thank you.
I told you that was going to be a good one, didn't I? Well, one of my favorite takeaways was to talk about courage and how courage is just simply a decision. You got to make a decision. If you want to be courageous, make a decision. Move towards where it is that you want to go. So I enjoyed this one very much, and I hope you did as well. But with any of these episodes that you watch, remember, they're only going to be good if you put them to good use. So take what you learned and apply. If you don't apply, it's very hard to go out and win. It's very hard to get better. It's very hard to improve. So take the lessons from today that Dennis Prager gave us, and let's put them into practice. We all depend on it. We all need you to take action. Take the right action. This is Coach Danny Cavalier with the Becoming a Champion Show. And if you enjoyed today's episode, like I said, give us a like, give us a comment, give us a thumbs up, and most importantly, share. And we'll see you next week with another episode of the Becoming a Champion Show. See ya.